My best friend John is a morning person. And he's the kind of morning person who swears you off of mornings. His cheerfulness increases in inverse proportion to how much you loathe being awake. A number of years ago, we were working together at Camp Allen with Miles, our mentor and college chaplain, at a summer camp he was directing. And like me, Miles is not a morning person by nature, and so it was John's job to wake him up for breakfast. I forget exactly how he undertook this task, but it definitely involved clapping and singing, which is not one of my best friend's strengths. So after several days of this torture, Miles had had enough. Wednesday began like Monday and Tuesday. John made his way down the hall toward Miles' room. The hall was long and narrow with tall ceilings, and John's painfully cheerful claps reverberated across the entire director's quarters. And the moment he opened Miles' door, a shoe hummed across the threshold, corkscrewing like a hard pass from an NFL quarterback. And it would have smacked John square in the forehead had not his youthful reflexes kicked in. Miles had slept all of that night with a shoe under his pillow, poised, ready to strike out against his tormentor and avenge night owls everywhere. Sometimes reading Paul makes me want to throw a shoe at him. I imagine Paul as the kind of morning person who could use a good smack in the forehead. It's hard for me not to hear the section of Romans that we heard this morning in anything other than that sanctimonious voice parents discover in themselves when it's time to awaken their children. Now is the moment for you to wake from sleep. Let us put on the armor of light. Let us live honorably as in the day, not in reveling and drunkenness or in debauchery or licentiousness or in quarreling or jealousy. I feel like Paul is channeling a TV preacher or one of those cheesy newsreels from the 1930s that champions clean living, neat appearance, and punctuality. I instinctively cringe at Paul's hearty English breakfast of cheerful moralizing and the armor of light. Sometimes I have to remind myself that Paul wrote these words long before capitalist societies made early mornings the crux of workplace productivity and worker efficiency, long before the public health campaigns of the early 20th century with their sacred mantra of 8 hours sleep, long before famous preachers profited from the opiate of cheerful Christian sanctimony. Paul isn't writing about daylight because he wants to make us automatons in the society of industrious Christian machine cogs. There was no such society in 56 AD. The only machine cogs that existed were in Greek sextons. The key to Paul's intent in this section of Romans lies behind the phrase, wake from sleep. The word wake is synonymous with the word rise. You do rise from your bed in the mornings, but you also might one day rise from your grave on Easter. Paul's entire treatment of daylight and daybreak is a metaphor for resurrection. Paul imagines the church as the first rays of God's beatific eternity falling across a groggy world. Paul calls upon the church not to practice industrious sanctimony, but to dispense with those kinds of falsehoods entirely. The armor of light is an apocalyptic metaphor, not a disciplinary moralizing one. The problem with the desires of the flesh is that they prevent us from being companionate with each other. Paul longs for the Roman church to practice transparent love because the salvation that is coming ever nearer, the day of resurrection will establish perfect, transparent love between human beings and between human beings and God. And Paul longs for the church to show the world a foretaste of that heavenly banquet by dropping practices that breed resentment and revenge. I think that the most beautiful part of life in this city right now is that we are living like Paul's vision of resurrection morning. People have put on the armor of light and reached out to folks who they might otherwise cross the street to avoid. Sure, there are the cringeworthy things, the blame game and the price gouging and the looting. But for the most part, these last 2 weeks have been pure and urgent and simple. Strangers saying to strangers, we belong together, and extending the hand of friendship with transparent sincerity. We have offered the world a foretaste of God's heavenly banquet, where the needs of any are the concern of all. And no one was browbeaten or shamed or moralized or disciplined into any of that. We aren't cogs in anyone's machine. Neighbors are helping each other out of a profound conviction that we belong together and that solidarity matters more than the desires of our flesh. We have borne witness to acts of Christian charity that make Jesus weep for joy and make Paul proud to call us his people. Of course, the desires of the flesh will return, and people will once more hasten to make provision for them. But Paul's vision in Romans 13 was never about us getting it right all the time from now on. Paul is trying to help us grasp something with our mind's eye, a resurrected life that is so good we can only touch it with metaphor and with poetry. Whatever happens in Houston as the recovery process from Hurricane Harvey lumbers on, I will always be grateful for these fleeting, glorious moments when we were worthy of Paul's vision of Easter, when we lived what Paul tried to capture in his prose. Resurrection morning has dawned in Houston, and my heart is glad.